We are talking today with attorney Thomas Lindsay. He is executive director with the organization Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. Thomas, thanks for spending time with us today.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having us, Mike.
Start out and tell us about your organization.
Well, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund was started in 1995, and it was really created to do one thing, which was to provide free legal services to community organizations, mostly environmental groups, grassroots environmental groups, and also to rural municipal governments, primarily in Pennsylvania.
You guys have, according to your website, about four different primary programs, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Not to get into too much of the mundane, but we do a range of different things at the Legal Defense Fund, and the program areas reflect that. Just to talk about two of them, one is an administrative and technical support program whereby we provide things like nonprofit incorporation processing for community groups, with the understanding that in the beginning, the goal was and still is to establish sustainable community organizations that are able to raise funds, perhaps put on a staff person, pay for gas, photocopies, those types of things to become sustainable. And the second of our four program areas is called the Corporations and Democracy Program, which was really created under the recognition that we were working with a lot of community groups and environmental groups especially to do things like permit appeals, to enforce environmental regulations, the type of stuff that conventional environmental attorneys do. But increasingly, over the 3 years that we did that work, even though we got awards from different organizations and we were invited to the White House's Environment Day during Al Gore and Bill Clinton's tenure, that we understood that, or began to understand, that conventional environmental law was really like an energy sink of sorts. And it was an energy sink because we would go out and we would win these permit appeals, or we would win environmental impact statement cases, or we would enforce a regulation here against an incinerator or a landfill or a factory farm or sewage sludge being applied to land. But in the end, 6 months later, a year later, the corporation or the government agency would simply come back, fill in the holes that we had identified during the litigation process that resulted in an overturning of the permit or moving the project back somehow, and eventually would get approved to do the project. And so the Corporations and Democracy Program was really established to work on creative strategies to assert local control and community rights over the rights of corporations. And that's probably one of our most exciting areas. We also do litigation and a couple other things, but that's a good overview.
So is your primary focus on helping citizens against corporations or against government agencies?
Well, to us, it's all about problem solving. And for instance, just to use the example that we're probably most widely cited for, starting in the late 1990s, Pennsylvania was targeted, rural Pennsylvania especially, north and south central Pennsylvania. We have an old joke in Pennsylvania, and I was born in Alabama, so I can tell it. But the old joke goes, we have Pittsburgh on one side of the state, Philadelphia on the other side of the state, and Mississippi in the middle. And it's in Mississippi that we do our work. It's 80% rural, conservative, Republican territory. And the folks that we work with in rural Pennsylvania are the guys with the John Deere hats and the steel-toe boots and the folks that, at least at the municipal level, actually plow the roads and salt the roads in the wintertime and maintain them in the summertime. What the factory farm corporations, keeping in mind that four corporations now control over 70% of pork production in the United States, that when the four corporations that control pork production here in this country decided to open up Pennsylvania to drive these corporate factory farms, these livestock assembly facilities into Pennsylvania, into rural Pennsylvania, the last thing they expected was a revolt of sorts. And we've come to naming it, what's happening in Pennsylvania, the Keystone Rebellion, where you have folks in rural Pennsylvania who have simply said, we don't want those things here. We don't want agribusiness corporations to come into our community to set up these 4,000-head hog factory farms. We want to be able to say no. And in working with them, you know, they called us and we came in. We service some of the elected officials in 400 elected municipal governments in central Pennsylvania, that these rural elected officials and the communities they represented, they didn't want to regulate these hog factory farms a little better. They didn't want to have them cause two parts per, or release two parts per billion or a million ammonia particulates rather than 4 parts per million ammonia particulates. They wanted to say no. They didn't want to better regulate the facilities to make them cause a little less damage. What they learned the hard way was that law, especially environmental law, has nothing to do with saying no. What environmental law has to do with is enabling you to get the facility or the project or the siting to simply cause a little less harm to the community in which it's being sited. And so here, in effect, these rural folks, perhaps the most unlikeliest of people in the most unlikeliest of places, came forward and said, this isn't good enough. It's not good enough just to be able to regulate these things a little better. We want to control them. And in the process, we want to control the authority of agribusiness corporations to define what farming looks like within our community. And that set us out on a course that took us far and away from the original work that we had done here with permit appeals and enforcing regulatory regimes. And there's actually an old saying that's popped up every now and then here, which is, the only thing that environmental regulations regulate is environmentalists. Because it regulates how predictable we are when we respond to certain things coming in. For instance, a hog factory farm coming in, the law tells you that all you can do is appeal a permit to the Department of Environmental Protection here in the state. And once again, that wasn't good enough for these folks in rural Pennsylvania who believe in democracy. They believe in self-governance, self-determination, community control, local control, and believe that they should have the right to be self-governing and to say no to these things coming in. And that took us over the past 5 years into places where we never envisioned going before.
That's inspiring that you're making headway with that. Can you tell us what kind of batting average you've been looking at?
Sure. In conventional environmental terms, I guess we're batting 1,000. Generally, when you do these permit appeals, you lose about 90% of them. But in Pennsylvania, when we decided to do things a different way, keeping in mind that it wasn't us with a silver bullet coming into a community saying, hey, we've got all the answers for you. These were communities coming to us saying, we're not happy with this regulatory stuff, this regulatory system. We don't want to just get these things to cause a little less harm. We want to be able to keep them out, period. And in doing so, they were doing something much more, I want to use the word radical, but it's not radical to us at all anymore. It's basically become a very logical process and a logical step for folks to look for other options and other alternatives. And lo and behold, in doing work and research for these municipal governments, we tripped over backwards, basically, because the nightly news never covers anything like this, but that 9 states in the Midwest, keeping in mind that these states in the Midwest have hog factory farms of 150,000 or 200,000 head that they've been dealing with for the past 40 years, in Pennsylvania, what we have is relatively boutique, 4,000, 5,000 head hog factory farms. And we figured if anybody had come up with an option that would enable communities to just say no to corporate assaults on their community, surely it was these folks in the Midwest. And what we tripped over was that since 1914 in places like Oklahoma, and since then in 8 other states in addition to Oklahoma, that the citizens of those states, mostly by referenda, have passed laws, statewide laws, that ban agribusiness corporations from owning or controlling farms. And I'll say that again because I think it's so important. Banning agribusiness corporations from owning or controlling farms. At some point, folks in those states said, it's not enough to deal with water pollution or air pollution or the odor from these facilities. Not only do we think focusing on the activities is the wrong tack to take, but we're going to shift gears and focus on the actors. Because what we're really talking about here is not air pollution or water pollution or those other things that environmental groups work on. It is those things, but it's something much larger. It's the corporatization of agriculture in this country, in which control and concentration of agricultural production is going into smaller and smaller number of corporate hands. At this point, 5 corporations own 70% of chicken production. 4 corporations own 70% of pork production. 4 corporations own 80% of beef production in this country. So when we talk about why we've lost 300,000 family farmers over the past 20 years, or in Pennsylvania alone that 3,500 livestock family farmers have been driven out of business, it's because there's a process involved. And the process is this corporatization of agriculture. These folks in the Midwest got it long before we did, and they passed these laws to ban agribusiness corporations from owning or controlling farms. That was fairly amazing to us that that happened. In the courts, because we always ask ourselves, although sometimes it's not as important as we think it is, about what the courts did with these things when they got into litigation over these laws. And lo and behold, the U.S. Supreme Court back in 1948 and every federal and state court looking at the question of whether states have the authority to pass laws banning agribusiness corporations from owning or controlling farms all came to the same conclusion. They upheld those laws as a legitimate exercise of power by those citizens of those states. So faced with that history of what folks have done in the Midwest, we asked ourselves, well, what do we do with this? And the answer was very straightforward. We stole them. We went into South Dakota and we took their law, which, by the way, is not just a statute, but part of the Constitution. Two states, Nebraska and South Dakota, drove these laws into the state constitutions. We took those. We reworked them into local ordinances, local laws that could be passed by the municipal governments that we've been working with. And we refashioned them with a citizen supervision to allow citizens to come in and enforce the laws as well as the enforcement officers in the locality. And we gave these to our municipal officials and worked with them to get an understanding of the process of what was really taking place in Pennsylvania with eliminating family farmers and putting corporations in place for this perverted view of agriculture or corporate farming, as it's called. To date, a dozen municipal governments that we work with have adopted those laws. You ask what the batting average is, and in this situation, with those dozen municipalities that were targeted for hog factory farms prior to 1997, and then they began passing these laws, not one new factory farm has sited in those areas. So the batting average for those folks is perfect. At the same time that we started dealing with the corporate factory farm issue, we got involved with this land application of sewage sludge issue. A lot of folks don't know, but 60% of all the sludge produced by sewage treatment plants in the United States is applied to cropland. It's where we grow our crops to be fed to livestock, but also fed to humans as cereal crops. And we used to dump it in the ocean, and then it killed a stretch of ocean from off the East Coast. And so the brain surgeons that gave us ocean disposal of sewage sludge now came up with this plan 10 years ago to put sludge on farmland. And the question is, why is that a dangerous practice? Well, sewage sludge can contain over 800,000 different toxic contaminants. The EPA and the state departments of environmental protection test for a grand total of 11. And so we really don't know what's in this stuff. In Pennsylvania, two kids have died after coming into contact with land-applied sewage sludge. And so some of the municipalities that had watched us, these rural community groups, these environmental organizations, these rural local governments, who had watched us deal with the corporate factory farm issue in partnership with some of their fellow or neighboring elected governments, came to us and asked us whether we could do the same thing with the sludge issue. And so we drafted a sludge ordinance that focused on the sludge corporations. A lot of people don't know this, but four national corporations control 70% of the sludge hauling industry in the United States. So we're talking about the corporatization of the waste management industry, parallel to the corporatization of farming or agriculture. We produced this ordinance, and then we worked with municipal governments to begin passing them. To date, 72 municipal governments in Pennsylvania have adopted that ordinance. And going back to your question about batting averages, all 72, whereas prior to the year 2000, they were slated to get sewage sludge, not one new teaspoonful of sewage sludge has been spread in those locations. And so purely from a more effective, you know, how do we be more effective as activists or as organizers or as lawyers or as community leaders or rural municipal officials? Purely from a perspective of how do we be more effective, not just regulating something, because when you regulate something, you assume it's an ongoing activity. That's what the word regulation means. Versus when we take a more comprehensive stance that says, hey, we understand it's the activity that's a problem, but we also understand that there are actors behind this process. And we're going to take aim at the actors. And for the first time, we're not going to settle for parts per billion. We're not going to settle for limiting some water pollution so it kills less macroinvertebrates in the waterways next door. We're going to say no. And we're going to exercise something that's supposed to be a fundamental and inalienable right in this country, which is to govern our own communities the way that we see fit. And that's the question that's come to the forefront here in Pennsylvania. It's not so much about having an agenda and saying we're going to go in and deal with corporations or corporate power or corporate rights. It's about problem solving and folks and communities understanding that they can't get what they want until they deal with corporations, and behind that, till they deal with corporate rights. And that's the final piece of this story, is that when folks begin passing laws to codify what they want, the corporate boys take action. They use their legislatures, they use the courts to come after those rural municipal governments that have made law. And here, that's exactly what's happened. But that's a good thing, not a bad thing, because it's the response that these ordinances draw. It's a response that comes in from the corporations that reveals to people, sometimes for the first time, that this is not a democracy that we live in. Because we live under a structure in which corporate rights trump routinely the rights of communities to decide what type of community they want. And it's that struggle, it's that provocation, it's that struggle, it's that response that takes us into a whole new round of organizing that 2 years ago resulted in the first two municipal governments in the United States passing a binding law at the municipal level, stripping corporations of constitutional rights. Now, under the law today, the U.S. Supreme Court has decreed that corporations are persons. Does make any sense to almost anybody out, except for the folks that put it there in the first place and use it every day to slam down communities. A lot of people ask, well, why does that matter, that corporations have the constitutional rights of persons? Well, it matters in a very real fundamental way. When a community passes a law, let's say these anti-corporate farming laws that were pioneered by the Midwestern states, and the agribusiness corporation is not willing to let them sit because they can't let them sit because they interfere with their model of business here in Pennsylvania, that they sue, and they sue the municipalities claiming that the ordinances violate their constitutional rights to equal protection because the ordinances treat the corporations differently from family farmers. And so the corporations come in. Think about how amazing this is. The corporations come in wielding our Constitution and our Bill of Rights and our Declaration of Independence to strike down laws being made by communities to codify their visions, their wants, their needs to build the type of sustainable, economically and environmentally sustainable communities that they want. But that's the situation, and it's not the exception, it's the rule. And so these two municipal governments in Pennsylvania looked at this, and they said, well, hey, we can pass ordinances on substantive issues, factory farms and sludge and this and that, but none of it's any good unless we can go an additional step, which means stopping corporations from interfering with our ability to make law by wielding our own constitution against us. And so these two municipalities took this, you know, once again, the word radical pops up, but it's not radical at all. It's very logical about clearing the path to be able to make the type of law to codify the type of communities that these folks want. Two communities in Clarion County, about an hour and a half north of Pittsburgh, passed ordinances called the Corporate Rights Elimination Ordinance. These ordinances strip corporations of their authority and ability to use the Constitution to trump the rights of communities to make law. That's been the journey for the past 4 or 5 years, moving from single issue, and there are 1,000 of them out there. We've just dealt with two, and what makes Pennsylvania, I think, this work so amazing is that two issues have given rise to the type of response that we've seen here in the state. Taking a single issue, reframing it into something different. In other words, it's not about factory farms at all. It's about this corporatization of agriculture. Adopting local laws, making law to deal with that process, in this case to eliminate corporations from farming, drawing the response, the inevitable response that corporations throw at this stuff, and then using that response to deepen and strengthen the community organizing so that we begin to move in a fundamental direction towards rewriting this framework of governance that controls these communities.
So do you see your strategy currently as expanding the two municipalities that have had this success to other municipalities kind of at a horizontal level, or do you see it as moving up to, let's say, trying to approach this at a state level?
Well, I think we're starting to drive into the county level. I mean, folks talk, especially environmental groups that we've worked with over the years, they don't think anything's real unless you do it at the state or the federal level. And our news for them, because we've tried to work at those levels, is that those levels are so cooked. that at this point we can't have anything to do with those levels, because in Pennsylvania, for example, the House and Senate agricultural committees are bought and sold routinely by the agribusiness corporations that do business here in Pennsylvania. And so the strategy for us has always been, how do you build enough municipalities out there? How do you build enough communities out there who believe that they can do what they want with their community to then drive this stuff into the county level and then drive this stuff into the state level and eventually drive it into the federal level? I mean, that's how we see it moving up. Right now you have about 10% of all rural municipal governments in Pennsylvania who have adopted our ordinances and who are experiencing any kind of a different level of response from the corporation, whether it's litigation, whether it's trying to push bills through the legislature to strip away local ordinance-making power from municipal governments here in the state, which has been ongoing for 3.5 years. We've been able to fight that back here in the Pennsylvania legislature. So they're experiencing different levels of response, and eventually that response is going to build into something higher. It's starting to now at the county level. We may have our first county that will be adopting a sludge ordinance and then dealing with the corporate response that comes from that. But it's an understanding that at the state and federal level, we are powerless. I can sit here right now in Pennsylvania and say that there's not one legislator in the Pennsylvania Senate or the House that shares my values or shares the values of these rural municipal governments in the type of work that they're doing. I think that's probably similar in most other places. And the key is, how do we develop the force that we need to drive the stuff into the states and into the federal government? Eventually, what we're talking about is nothing less than changing the Constitution, because it's the Constitution where corporations draw these powers from. And so we're not going to get there by just finding a perfect court case and then praying and hoping that 9 Supreme Court justices, or a majority of them, are all of a sudden going to repudiate 200 years worth of property law dealing with corporations here in the United States. The long-term solution is to rewrite the framework of governance in this country, and that's not quick work. The abolitionists, it took 60 years, and some would say longer. Women's rights movements took 2 or 3 generations. It's a fact of whether we're here to do this work for real or whether we're here just to chip around the edges and change the volume knob. And these democracy schools, and the one opening in Seattle in mid-February, are targeted towards taking the work that's been done in Pennsylvania and replicating it into as many different communities across the United States as possible. Because one thing is clear, if it's just Pennsylvania doing this, if it's just 100 municipal, rural municipal governments doing it, even if it's just 500 rural municipal governments in Pennsylvania, we will be crushed unless similar work is done in all kinds of different communities across the United States. And so these democracy schools, and we'll have 7 permanent full-time operating schools that'll teach between 4 and 6 schools a year, by the end of 2005 we'll have those in place in places like Santa Fe, New Mexico, Boston College, Seattle, Washington, D.C., Colorado, Black Mountain, North Carolina, different places where citizen groups have said to themselves, community organizations have said, we're tired doing this work. It's not working. It's an energy sink. It's not getting us to where we want to be, and we need to find a different way to do this work so that we can finally give birth to these self-governing communities that we've always been promised since the early days of the Republic.
And in addition to your democracy schools, your website seems to have a lot of supporting documents.
Some of the history of Pennsylvania, the work that's been done here is up on our webpage, as well as our ordinances for folks that are interested in downloading those things as well. And that's at www.celdef.org. It stands for the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, so it's celdf.org. And there's also a group that we work very closely with called the Program on Corporations, Law, and Democracy. Richard Grossman, who's a co-founder of POCLAD, will be teaching the Democracy School, co-teaching the Democracy School as well, speaking on the Thursday evening before in downtown Seattle. And their webpage is www.poclad.org.
Yeah, we should point out again that the Democracy School, in which for this coming February, is filled, but there will be some more offered in April and May that listeners can sign up for.
And we had an overwhelming response for the Seattle School, which is, of course, the first one held in Seattle. I think we have 30 or 40 people on a waiting list who will be given the option of participating in one in late April or early May. And depending on how these go, the Seattle organizers may be putting together a permanent school which will teach between 4 and 6 of these schools a year.
And you'll also be one of the speakers at the February 10th event that's going to be held at Trinity United Methodist Church here in Seattle, is that correct?
Yes, and generally to tell the Pennsylvania story at the democracy schools, it takes about 3.5 hours. For the evening of the 10th, we're going to try to compact that down into 45 minutes to an hour. And then Richard Grossman will talk about his involvement in this work and how it really gives or focus or targets on some of the real deeper fundamental issues that we're trying to get to with corporate culture and corporate power and corporate rights.
Where do you see the concept of challenging and or revoking corporate charters fitting into all this?
Well, originally we had a corporate charter program, and that was our focus. We actually brought the first corporate charter revocation litigation brought in Pennsylvania in the past close to a century against the Waste Management Corporation in Pennsylvania to revoke their charter. That was back in 1997. And we, of course, lost that case. We developed some very good briefing materials and some other collateral benefits that came out of it. But we don't see corporate charter revocation as an end in itself anymore. We see it as part of these new campaigns that are moving forward, campaigns aimed at much more fundamental things than just charter revocation. Because in a way, charter revocation aimed at a specific corporation is still seen as a punishment of sorts. And we see the work that communities are doing around corporations to be more of treating corporations as a cancer that needs to be cut out. After all, we don't punish cancer. I mean, that's not the goal of cancer treatment. It's not to punish cancer. It's to remove it from the body. And in this sense, when we talk about corporate charter revocation, it almost pretends at some level that one corporation can be a bad corporation of some sort and has to be removed by having its charter revoked. Well, the point that we're at now is much more comprehensive and fundamental, which is corporate rights, which are, of course, possessed by all corporations across the scheme. And in addition, it's not just corporations anymore, of course, it's the few who run them. Because in this country, basically what we have is the corporate few running the majority. And that's not what this country ostensibly is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about majority rule. It's supposed to be with protection for certain rights of minorities. But at this point, we have the corporate few governing the majority. And that's so fundamentally incompatible with concepts of democracy that I think that's something that fuels the movement as well. When we deal with charter revocation or bring a charter revocation suit, it really ignores, it doesn't reinforce all the larger stuff. And that's why we think it's a tool to be used within certain campaigns that aim at the larger stuff, but probably not as a standalone.
Do you see this struggle as something that can be won in your lifetime?
I think we're looking at a conservatively probably 40 to 50 year battle, because it is a battle over everything. This isn't just a piece, just saying, you know, we're going to take 9 years to overturn blank, blank precedent or blank, blank decision of the U.S. Supreme Court. It's much deeper than that. It's about people facing their own demons inside and how folks have been colonized to think in certain ways that only certain things are possible. And we only have really had one other movement in this country that really took aim at all of the fundamentals, and it was the populist movement of the late 19th century. And the populists took on everything, credit institutions, banking. They elected their own folks to Congress. They took over the legislatures of several states. And they did so out of a fundamental understanding that the economy should benefit them and not benefit the corporate few. And for folks that know the history of the populists, they were crushed. And they were crushed with the help of a group called the progressives. And the progressives were the folks that gave us the regulatory state, who decided that it was inevitable that we would have corporations as the norm, and that corporations would be the fundamental unit through which we did our economies and work and production. And it's very strange that we're so colonized that we think the word progressive is a good word, but in effect the progressives with a regulatory standard undercut, demolished, and trumped the populists who were trying to make some more fundamental change. So we have to face to face with those demons and understand how our own brains have been tinkered with in terms of thinking about what's possible, because we no longer ask ourselves, what do we want as activists? We ask ourselves, what can we get? And that's very dangerous. We have to get back to asking ourselves what type of communities we want and then mowing down everything that stands between us and getting that vision.
All right. We're speaking with attorney Thomas Lindsay. Thomas, one last time, how can people find out more about the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund?
Well, we're on the web at www.celdef.org, and that's the acronym Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. And folks can email us if they have specific questions about the democracy schools. There's a full national democracy school schedule that can be accessed via the webpage. Our email here is info@celdef.org.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing you speak here in town.
Yes, well, thanks for having us.